quintillions. The number was unreal. Maybe he could buy one of those woven leather lead ropes for Windsplitter, or buy some new furniture if Chrissy had lost all hers. The thought of Chrissy hit him. He had been keeping it suppressed so he could keep on going. McAdam and the Baron collected up their things again and walked out, shaking their heads and muttering, "Brown limper," and "made trouble clear to the end." A wailing, petulant voice cut into the room, and Sir Robert looked up. Stormalong was behind two Russians at the room entrance, who were stolidly blocking him out of it.
"Sir Robert, please come out here. I've had a dispatch that's been waiting for you for hours and hours and hours."
Sir Robert pushed past the Russian guards and vanished. Johnny sat there, a little bit spent, trying to get oriented to what the rush of events added up to, trying to decide what he should do now. He made up his mind. Nothing was holding him here. He would go out and get a plane and get to Scotland to help. He grabbed his helmet off the floor. The two Russians at the door parted to let him through. He collided with Sir Robert. The old Scot was standing there, a written message in his hand. He was crying and laughing all at the same time. Sir Robert pushed the dispatch into Johnny's hand.
"Ah, weel, 'tis quite a mess. But Johnny, the old rock protected them all."
Edinburgh. They had gotten through the last tunnel at dawn today. They were half-starved, some injured, all in a state of greater or lesser shock, but they had gotten them out, all 2,100 of them. Johnny felt dazed with relief. There were no specific names mentioned in the radio dispatch. He stumbled out into the bowl, meaning to go to ops. There was someone across the bowl, someone covered with dust but wearing the domed helmet they used in high-speed flying. It was Thor. Thor was beckoning to him gladly. Thor shouted,
"Look who we got here for you, Johnny!"
Somebody was rushing toward him. She threw her arms about him, crying his name. It was Chrissy, gaunt and pale, her black eyes flooding with tears.
"Oh, Johnny, Johnny," she was saying. "I'm never going to leave you again. Never. Hold me, Johnny."
Johnny did. He just stood there, almost crushing her ribs. He held her for a long time. He couldn't talk. Chapter 31 1 Johnny was riding Windsplitter along the banks of the Alzette River in Luxembourg. He was leisurely wending his way home. It was a lovely summer day. The sunlight spattered down through the leafy trees along the trail, making patterns of green and gold that shifted gently and seemed to slowly echo the soft music of the purling stream. Windsplitter snorted and tried to rear. It was the bear. The same bear they had seen there several times during the 3 months they had been in Luxembourg, using this same trail from the old mine site to Johnny's house. The bear was fishing. He stopped now and tested the environment with his nose and saw them. He was a pretty big bear, brown, about 6.5 feet tall as he stood up. "It's just the bear, you old fraud," said Johnny. Windsplitter sort of laughed and settled down. He did what he could to make life more exciting. And ever since the horses had been flown down from Russia, they had been getting fat from idleness. Johnny always rode him down to the mine site, mornings, and left him to poke around the strange doings there until Johnny rode home. Just now he would have been far happier with a good old flat-out run through these interesting summer-dressed woods. But he stood still, obedient to a heel command. Johnny sat and idly watched the bear. It had resumed its fishing, seeing no menace in the horse and rider on the other bank of the shallow stream. Johnny bet if he had been a cyclo, that bear would have left the country, and would have still been running all the next day. Johnny indifferently wanted to see if the bear would catch any of the big trout with which the stream abounded. For all this beautiful day, Johnny had a small feeling of disappointment. He had awakened that morning with the odd conviction that this new day was going to bring something really eventful, some piece of good news, and all day he had been anticipating it. He reviewed what had happened so far to see if any bright event had been missed by him. He had gone, pretty much as usual, down to the old mine site to find the routine bedlam in progress. 3 months ago, he had bought the old Grand Duchy of Luxembourg from the Intergalactic Holdings. The Cyclos had had an iron mine there, which they had worked in a lackadaisical fashion. They had also built a small steel mill and a forge, which they used to turn out hooks, ore buckets, and such for their mines on Earth. The invaders had not touched the place, already well defended, and the deep underground levels had been ideal for doing the final setup of consoles. Angus McTavish and Tom Smiley Townsend worked there, behind vault doors. They had streamlined assembly, so all they had to do was implant the pattern of the circuit on the insulating board, assemble the console, and shove it into a shipping case. Everything else was pre-constructed, practically out in the open, since it gave away nothing. In fact, nobody but Johnny, Angus, Tom Smiley, and Sir Robert knew that the consoles were completed at Luxembourg. The pre-assembly even included boxing. People who did it thought Angus and Tom Smiley were just inspectors. But these two, working only a couple of hours a day, using designed patterns and tools, withdrew the pre-constructed console out of the case, finished it, sealed it, and then lined it up in the rows of them. A heavily guarded convoy of trucks then drove them an incredible distance down to an ancient tunnel, once called St. Gotthard, about 9 miles long. There, the boxes were unloaded onto mine platform cars and sent on the ancient rails to the tunnel center. An automatic machine stamped them completed as they were passed through a blocked chamber and put them onto a new set of mine platform cars. A brand new set of trucks, much more heavily guarded, then rushed them to the new firing platform that was now located in a mountain bowl outside Zurich. There, they were routed and shipped. As Johnny, Angus, and Tom Smiley had set up the tunnel, and as it was heavily gunned and guarded, nobody knew who did the final assembly. Some thought there were special personnel or gnomes or something that lived in that tunnel and did the work. They were batting out about 200 consoles a day. The pre-assembly people were making the whole platform and poles and wiring, since none of that was secret, and they were being shipped right along with the consoles. No, mused Johnny. There was nothing startlingly new in all that today. It was last week when Tom Smiley had told him Margarita was going to have a baby. The bear had gotten his first trout. He batted it way up on the bank, looked around, and then went back to fishing. Windsplitter had found some young grass and was noisily pulling it up and eating it. There had been nothing new with the Chatavarians. The bank had informed Sir Robert the moment all arms and related firms had crashed, but good, in the Chatavarian Empire, and Sir Robert and Angus and half a dozen Salachis had sped there. The Chatavarians had the reputation of being the best defense builders. It was their boast that no cyclo attack had ever broken through in an entire 700-planet empire. They had even shot down gas drones. So, for that and other reasons, the new teleportation company, now called the Rig Industry, after Johnny rejected using his name on it, had done business with the Chatavarians. The Salachis had helped Angus find the right companies and had helped Sir Robert do the purchasing, and they now owned 11 Chatavarian firms, each one specialized in what they needed. There had been no dearth of firms for sale, and no lack of engineers and workers in that heavily overpopulated empire, 49 trillion. They had left the main offices in Chatavaria, and only working sections were here. No, there had been no good news about all that. Rather, a bit of bad news. The main offices of those firms were costly to maintain as they couldn't fire key staff there. And the problem of what they should now manufacture at home was coming up. Their technology and ability were good. Johnny had a little trouble with their math. They used a binary system, as everything they had ran on computers and circuits. But everything they built was just great, with one exception. Johnny could not abide reaction engines. Flying one was a drag, and they required special runways and pads to land. They were fine out in space, but not for atmosphere transport. You couldn't even stunt them, really. The Chataverians themselves were all over the place at Luxembourg. They were nice people. They stood about 5 feet tall, had somewhat flat heads and big buck teeth. They were a bright orange tan. Their hands were a trifle webbed, but very nimble, and they were strong. Johnny had found that out when he was fooling around wrestling with one of their engineers. Johnny had come within an ace of not being able to throw him, and they were always going fast. Work, work, work. They ate wood, and the first thing they did when their crews arrived was plant about 15,000 acres of assorted trees, planted with the speed of machine guns into what they called catalyst pots. This was so they could have something to eat. They had a bit of conflict with the three Chinese engineers that were here. The Chinese liked to build out of wood, and the Chataverians thought that was an awful waste of good food. The Chataverians loved to work with stone. They had small beam tools, like swords, and they cut stone with splice notches so it would hang together with no mortar. Then they annealed the stone and made it join molecularly so it was armor hard, and the whole grain of the stone came out in bright, glossy colors. Very pretty. They taught the Chinese how to do it, and the Chinese taught them how to weave silk, so all was forgiven, and it came out with smiles. But it was touchy for a while. Going to a Chataverian dinner was like walking into a lumber yard. Johnny had to make them promise not to gnaw down all the trees in sight. The Chataverians tended to overstaff, and unless Johnny dreamed up some consumer product for the home offices to build, the red ink on their balance sheets would splash into blood. He wanted to get them building teleportation motor cars and planes, but he didn't know how to make a teleportation motor, and all efforts to work it out failed. Those blasted cyclomathematics. Nothing ever balanced. The thought made him restless. The bear had caught another fish. The sunlight played over Johnny's buckskin shirt. He had been sure something nice would happen today. Well, the day wasn't over. He touched Windsplitter's shoulder, and the horse decided it was a signal to run, which it wasn't, and went tearing up the trail for home.